Okay, so running has, you could definitely say, has been part of my life, my entire life, but it wasn't because I was doing it.
Diz Runs Radio, episode 593 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick before we dive into today, just want to let you know, once again, not the first time we've talked about this, but that the book is finally ready. Be Ready on Race Day is out there. It's alive. The feedback is coming in. Most of it has really been positive so far. Hopefully, those of you that have pre-ordered the book or have gotten it since it's released, purchased it on Amazon or whatever, have found it useful. It's not some thick tome of all the ins and outs and the science and this and that of how to train for a race. But what it is, in case you haven't heard yet, is it's a short book, an easy read that basically walks you through step by step everything that I do when I'm working with my clients, my athletes that I coach, to help them prepare for their race. It gives you the blueprint of how to do that for yourself. So if you find yourself in a position where maybe you've got some races coming up this fall that you're interested in, looking at running and wanting to do well, wanting to push a new PR, maybe grab that elusive Boston qualifying time or whatever it is, break a time plateau that you haven't been able to get underneath yet. And you've been relying on those one size fits all kind of training plans for a while, I would encourage you to branch out a little bit, get off of the one size fits all philosophy that quite honestly I don't think works for anybody, and put your own plan together. And like I said, you can use the book Be Ready on Race Day. It'll walk you through the process. You can even use that one size fits all plan as a framework and kind of tweak it, adjust it, and really make the plan your own. And the idea of the book, the goal of the book, and what I think the feedback has been so far is that the book helps you do that. Helps you understand why to do certain runs, what to do when life gets a little angry at you and you've got to adjust and adapt and move some things around, how to do that without freaking out and without feeling like your plan is gone awry now because you had to miss a couple days of running because the kids got sick or because work got a little bit crazy. All that stuff is detailed in the book, as well as some ways that you can kind of get a free call with me as well, to kind of help you through any struggles that may be, that you have to deal with along the way. So check it out. BeReadyOnRaceDay.com is the website. And you can also find it on an Amazon near you, anywhere around this world where Amazon is, which I think is pretty much everywhere. The book is there as well. Amazon, just search for Be Ready on Race Day, or you can search my name and I'll pop up too as an author. Still crazy to think about that. But thanks everybody who have purchased the book so far. And if you're using it for a race coming up this fall, we'd love to know how it's going for you. And can't wait to see those photos with the bling at the end, showing off the race hardware that you have earned from reading the book and following along that way. So without any further ado, once again, BeReadyOnRaceDay.com. And now let's go ahead and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, I'm excited for today's episode because I really haven't done an episode like this in a while. And by a while, I didn't go back and count, but I'm pretty sure I mean more than like 500 episodes since I've really had the opportunity to talk to somebody and really dive in deep to learn the ins and outs of any one particular race. So that's a big part of what we're going to be doing during today's chat. In addition to being a runner herself, though, obviously she's a runner, and in addition to that, my guest is also a part of the team behind the Prairie Fire Marathon, which happens every fall out in Wichita, Kansas. So I'm looking forward to obviously getting to know her a bit more today and kind of her running past, as well as talking a good bit about all things Prairie Fire. So without any further ado, it is my pleasure to be able to welcome Ms. Lacey J. Hansen to the show. Thanks for joining us, Lacey. Really appreciate you taking the time today to shoot the breeze with us a little bit.
Thank you. I'm glad you reached out. I'm glad to talk to you.
Yeah, certainly. Looking forward to it. And guys, if you want to find out more about the race, like I said, we're going to be talking quite a bit about it. But the website, if the conversation spurs you and to interested to check it out, maybe sign up for it. PrairieFireMarathon.com is the website. And on the socials, Twitter is @RunPFM. On the Instagram, @RunPrairieFire. And on Facebook, if you just look for the Prairie Fire Marathon, you will find it. And if you want to connect with Lacey herself, The social handles pretty much across the board are at Lacey J. Hansen. It's L-A-C-Y, the letter J, H-A-N-S-E-N. And as always, we'll have everything linked up in the show notes for this episode, like we do in every episode. And for this episode, you can get to them at dizruns.com/593. So, Lacey, the way we always start off the show is with the same introductory question. Pretty simple to ask, sometimes pretty simple to answer. Sometimes, boy, it's almost a stumper, and it's not meant to be that difficult of a question. But there's so many great races out there that sometimes people struggle a little bit. But it's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
I would probably be better at a different distance, but it's the full marathon. I was even thinking why? For me, I guess it's the one that brings me to the end of myself. And, gosh, it's so hard, but it's so rewarding when it goes right, but it's so hard to get it right sometimes. So I think that's it. I think it's also a matter of, I can maintain strength at that distance without completely blowing up every time, but it's not like, it's not the torture that I see a 5K as, which most people look at you and think you're insane, but a 5K hurts the whole entire time. This, you get to, you work into the pain. So I guess when people ask me, you know, what's the difference, it's just a matter of how you like your pain. So I guess I like mine slow and steady. So
yeah, you're in good company, at least as far as I'm concerned. You know, some people, you know, to each their own. Some people love that 5K, but yeah, I would rather have a slow suffer than that short, intense, just every step is pushing the limit, like it is when you're really racing a 5K hard. You know, as per usual, when I ask that question, the answer usually elicits three or four follow-up questions, and it's a you know, sometimes a struggle to pick which one to go down. But like you said, you know, when it's hard to get things right all the time on the marathon, in part because it's a long enough race, you're still pushing pretty hard, even though it's not obviously the 5K type of intensity, but you're going for 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever the case might be. You know, it's a difficult time. Lots of things can happen. And I feel like I came across somewhere on one of the social medias that you're 3:15 marathon PR. That's pretty good. I got a feeling that was one of those days that things kind of lined up and went pretty well.
Yes. Yes. And then it's like this mystical unicorn that you're chasing for the rest of your career. Yeah. My PR is technically like 3 or 4 seconds faster than my previous 3:15 and something. And then a year later it was 3:15 and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I'll take it that is hard, but you're right. Yeah. That day. And then the following day, everything went right. And yeah, it's some secret sauce that sometimes is really, really hard to make happen again.
Yeah. And that's certainly one of those areas that as a runner, as a coach, as anybody that's related to the sport, you know, it's always trying to figure out what it is that you need to do to get that best performance again and get the stars to align and whatnot. You know, like you said there, you have a couple of races that were right there, plus or minus a few seconds of each other. Any idea of why things went right for you in those races, or really was it just a matter of, you know what, like, you know, it was the stars just aligning. It was just some random thing. Like it just happened to be my day. Is there anything that you can look at and go, I think that this, at least maybe not 100%, but played a big part in having a good day on those race days?
I think the interesting thing about both of my strongest, my fastest marathons, I work with a coach. I work with Kevin Granato with Granato Racing. And so he gets lots of credit of tailoring every week, looking at where I'm at, where does he need to bump, where does he need to push, where does he need to pull back. But interesting about both of those strong races that I was actually coming off of an injury, and probably my mileage wasn't especially on the last one, my mileage wasn't anywhere where it had been for other marathon training, and I had been cross training more because of the injury. And there was probably something to it going in, going in a little fresher. My legs weren't as worn out. And mentally, I thought, this is crazy. This is silly. I am not prepared for this. I think even on one of them, I don't even know if I even ran a 20. Wow. And so I was like, I'm already signed up for it. The plane tickets, we'll just go. And man, going in fresh had to have been, I think I'm a believer now that it's not about the quantity. It's definitely about the quality of the workouts. And I was not as exhausted mentally and physically. So it took me a long time to trust him and to trust the process. But that's what I would probably point to, is that it was less running miles, probably more cross training, and just more rest.
That is a very interesting answer that I could dive down and talk about that for days. And so I'll try to keep my thoughts on this short and maybe ask one other question of you about that. But as people that listen to the show for a while know, I've been kind of going much more of the heart rate training method this year, kind of as an experiment, trying it myself, not doing much for intensity, but really building that base and seeing what that does, you know, when I do run a race or when I do a hard workout, you know, am I able to go harder, faster, more endurance, those types of things. And in going down that route, I've been looking into some Phil Maffetone stuff and some of his thoughts, who's kind of the godfather of the slow, steady heart rate training theory. Mm-hmm. And his line of thinking is that what it's going to take for somebody to break 2 hours in the marathon isn't to do all the fancy stuff that Nike did earlier this year with streamlining and everything and trying to make it all perfect. It is going to be kind of what you just said, of somebody who's willing to run less, to buck the conventional wisdom and show up fresh, show up recovered, show up, you know, obviously going to have a strong base of fitness, but show up without that fatigue of 100-mile week after 100-mile week. So it's really interesting what you said. And I have to ask the follow-up for that then. Are those like your most recent races, or have you gone into other races since then, maybe more overtrained, or have you been able to put that strategy into play in other races when you weren't coming off an injury since then?
A little bit, but I think there was some little blessing in disguise coming off of that injury, that because the races following that were a little bit more traditional as far as just running miles, you know, hard day, easy day, long run, or something along that. But and then I'll throw my little asterisk in there. I had an unrelated accident and tore my ACL, had nothing to do with running. And so everything since then maybe doesn't qualify because it's such a major injury to overcome. But yeah, all that to say, I will watch friends and fellow runners and just wear themselves out. And I'll tell them, I think there is something to maybe, you know, cut back some of this mileage. And if nothing else, mentally for me, getting to the starting line by that point, you know, what is it? 16, 18 weeks. There have been plenty of times where I'm like, I am done. I don't want to do this. Right. So showing up there, still being excited, not having, you know, really hit that, that just exhaustion, I think was, you know, invaluable.
Yeah. It's an interesting, topic of discussion. Like I said, something that I could talk about for, you know, the both the science and the theoretical, and like, who knows? And maybe, you know, like you said, I mean, is it the stars aligning? Many variables that come into play.
Oh, yeah.
But it's an interesting topic and something that I'm certainly looking to continue to, explore and learn more about. But, we're not going to focus all of our time today on just that one area, but would be curious, how did you get into running? Is running something that's always been something that you've done, or when did you catch the itch for the sport that we all know and love?
It's so funny. Okay, so running has been part of my life, my entire life, but it wasn't because I was doing it. My grandfather ran and got my dad into distance running, and this was his father-in-law, so my mother's father, and then got my dad into it because he had just, you know, in high school ran track. You know, anyone who in the 70s who ran more than a mile was crazy. And so my granddad got my dad into it, and then all my uncles into it. So many of our family gatherings were traveling either to Tulsa for the Tulsa Run, and granddad, dad, uncles, everybody ran, and me and all my cousins and my mom's, my aunts sat on the side, or they all came here for the Wichita River Run in the spring and various things. So my life has been about it, but I didn't even attempt it until long after I was out of high school, I was out of college, and I was already a mother.
Wow.
and then it's just, you know, the rest is history. And my dad cracks up. I think one of my favorites is that he just kind of looked at me one day when apparently not only did I love it, but I had a little bit of talent in it. And he was like, "Lacey, the scholarships you let go by." So who knows? I don't know. But I didn't start running until I was, I think, 24. Mm. And I had a toddler at home. Something about having a 2-year old at home really allows a mother to really feel the need to run away. So
yes, we've got a 3, almost 4-year old right now, and that she still hasn't grown out of that phase yet, where sometimes it's like just want to get out of here for a minute and
clear just a second.
Yeah. What was it that spurred you to get started? I mean, I don't want to pin it all on the toddler, but was it that, or was that just kind of a clever excuse to make it a little bit more part of
Oh yeah, I think a lot of it too was I had gained so much weight when I was pregnant, like over 60 pounds, and I'd finally gotten it all off, and I did it all by just reducing my calories. Mm. And I was hungry.
Right.
And I think I was like, hey, if I exercise, I could probably maintain the weight but eat a little bit more. So either trying to get away from a toddler or being hungry, but that's kind of where it started. But then immediately figured out, I get it now. This is what my dad's been talking about all these years. Just a little bit of time to yourself to clear your head. And yeah, it's stuck big time.
Right. Yeah. And obviously something you've enjoyed, you continue to work at, continue to race hard and train hard and things like that. And also kind of finding a way, as we're kind of bridging into talking about Prairie Fire a little bit, mm-hmm. finding a way to make it part of your career as well, working with the race, mm-hmm. and having that be part of not only play and relaxation and enjoyment, but also professionally. Have you found that being associated with the race and kind of having running be part of your job, is that a tough balance for you to keep running still fun, still something that's enjoyable while it's also work? Are you able to separate the two? Does it blur the mm-hmm. line sometimes? Like, how does that play out? Cause I mean, honestly, like I'm kind of in that situation now where this is my job and I enjoy it and I love it. But sometimes it's like, sometimes I don't want to run for a few days, and it's like, but you got the quote unquote, the persona of you're a runner.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Do I have to keep running? So how have you found
you.
That? Yeah, exactly. How have you found that beat for yourself?
Yeah. I think it's more or less probably been a really good lesson for me, because being involved with a race that has so many levels of runners has opened my eyes up to what running for a lifetime can be. Mm-hmm. It's not always going to be competitive. I'm not always going to be able to be a contender. And I also can see that there are people who just love it. They just love it. They're never going to win. They're never going to win anything. Excuse me. They're never going to win anything. They're never going to place in their age group. And that doesn't matter. They doesn't matter how fast or how slow they are. And that has actually been probably one of the better lessons, is opening my eyes to what a runner actually is. I love the competition. I love seeing people come and challenge state records and run, you know, paces that I could only dream of. But now I also work at a race, and I've stood out there when the clock has technically stopped and it's been over 7 hours, and we know we've got one more person out there, and we're going to make sure there's somebody here to welcome them in. And so I think in that respect, it has taught me a lot, and learned to probably swallow some of my pride and realize that, the person who comes in at 7 hours still worked just as hard, and honestly harder, because they were out there, 3 more hours, 4 more hours than everyone else. So, That part has been good. But then on the other side of it, like currently rehabbing another injury, which sounds like the story of my life, you kind of feel like a fraud because I've been spending the summer on a bike while I'm trying to get back into better running health. And I'm like, oh, no one's going to believe that I have any authority to give them advice about running or, you know, any sort of. And so that part of it for sure. But then again, then I have to check myself because people who have remained runners or in the community lifelong, this has been part of their story. You know, when you meet 70-year-old runners, they're like, yeah, there was a solid year where I had to work through something. And so I don't know if that answered the question, but I think ultimately it's been a good lesson for me to get to know what running in all stages actually is.
Gotcha. That's certainly something that I can relate to as well. It's a lot easier to get out of your quote unquote bubble or your mm-hmm. your little personal mm-hmm. Sphere of what running looks like when you're able to interact with different folks and see them and obviously, hopefully the injury heals up, but who knows? Maybe you're setting yourself up for a 3:10 now because you're coming off an injury right? And you're a little bit more recovered. You can go out and hammer it right? The next race.
I know. I was like, as I was saying that, I was like, hey, maybe this is my year.
Yeah, definitely. And at least if nothing else, we can have another data point in the theory of a little bit
right?
less training.
Right?
What does that do on race day when, you know, and the trick then, of course, is to get to testing it with a little less training, but not coming off of an injury. So like,
exactly.
and not have to go through the breakdown process before you build yourself back up.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh goodness. So, talking a little bit about Prairie Fire now, let's get into the what makes this race unique because, there's obviously, you're working in it more than I am, although I'm kind of trying to track, crack into some, being associated with some races and things like that. But, mm-hmm. There's no shortage, at least here in the States and some other places around the world as well. There's no shortage of races. Every month you go to Marathon Finder or any of those websites that list all the different races. And most months there's 10, 15, 20, some months there's 50, 60, 70. And that's talking just about marathons. And then if you go at half marathons, right. it's even more numbers.
Oh yeah.
So there's no shortage of races out there. And quote unquote, all of them claim to be flat and fast or the cool, see the best parts of the city or whatever. They all kind of have their selling features. And even then, it kind of all blurs the lines a little bit because there's so many that are claiming to be the same things. But with Prairie Fire, with a race that obviously you have intimate knowledge in, you're living it mm-hmm. every day as opposed to running it once a year or something like that, like the runners mm-hmm. do. What from your perspective and knowing the race in and out and upside down and backwards and forwards and all that good stuff, what makes the Prairie Fire Marathon a race that that is worth not just those that are local area driving into, but for somebody who's looking for a fun race to run in the fall that has, the United States as their map. Where am I going to go? What is unique about Prairie Fire to make somebody have that on their list of, that sounds like a pretty cool race that might be worth giving
right.
a shot.
Right. I know. And it's funny because you did say that because everybody says they're flat, but hey man, we're in Kansas.
I'm setting you up for that one. Yeah.
I was like, I don't know if there's anywhere else that is as flat. So I always say that is that it is very flat. And like there, I live in a neighborhood that the race runs through and the neighborhood's called College Hill. And I always tell everybody when I meet them at the expo, they're like, what can you tell us about this College Hill area? And I was like, oh, our hills are adorable. You're going to love it. Like it's just, there is really truly like not any elevation gain or loss to speak of. It's all man-made. So it's nothing to really worry about. So on that front, especially when we meet people who come from Colorado, our next door neighbors, and they legitimately have something to talk about with hills, this isn't a hill. I'm like, I know. So on that front, that can help keep the morale higher when you're running. I mean, it's just a really far distance, half or full, depending, it can be really hard. So that part I think helps take one of the elements away, because there are some fantastic races, even, you know, down in Oklahoma, which I didn't realize had hills, but Tulsa has hills and they have a fantastic marathon. But like at mile 23, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. So
yeah. And something that doesn't seem like a hill, like when you're driving it or when you're,
yeah,
when it's just 2 miles, it's an easy, you know, you're doing an easy 8 miler and you're a couple miles in, like,
right,
it's not that bad. Yeah. At mile 23, that not bad hill, yeah, is a whole different, yeah, animal.
Exactly. So we won't give you any of that. So I definitely will argue anyone else telling me their race is flat. So we've got that. And then we've got a lot of character that you get to see. So, I mean, if you're, you know, it's not going to be one really powerful loop, because it is taking you through essentially every notable element of the city. And we love to, I get the opportunity to share with everybody on social media little bits of history that you'll go through. And, you know, one of my favorites is we go right past East High School, and that's where Jim Ryan, 5 minute mile or the four minute
mile, first time.
Yeah. 4 minute mile. Yeah. So gosh, you think I like have that memorized. I have it on a t-shirt and even met him, but we get to go past places like that. Like, that's one of my favorite first places you get to go past is you actually get to see where it happens. But we have neighborhoods who are very excited that you're there. And that's always a big plus, because we won't have a hill to break you down, but then you'll have people, you know, they may only be rolling out in their jammies on their porch, but you know how much that can help a person, mm-hmm, when they're struggling. So, yeah, so I definitely will say we are flat and we have lots of character.
Gotcha. That's that character bit. And especially, like you said, the support of people who live in town, I think it's something that goes overlooked a lot, but I mm-hmm, I've noticed that in a few races that I've run, where, yeah, like people that just come out to the end of the driveway or to sit on the porch or whatever. And then you get a couple of neighborhoods. I don't know, maybe there's some for your race where I've run through the cul-de-sac before, and they've got the party going. They've got the mimosas,
yeah,
out there. Like,
yeah,
like they've got the little snacks if you,
yeah,
want something. Do you get a lot of that, or at least some of that in some of the neighborhoods?
You get
as well?
Some of that for sure. And, one of the places where you need it most is, there's two neighborhoods that are connected, and they're connected by smaller than preferred part of the route is more of like a large sidewalk. Mm. So, right there where you go onto that connecting piece, there's always, they're set up in their driveway and they're having the time of their life because they don't have to run.
They're not
the
running,
rest of the,
yeah,
marathon.
Right.
Yeah. But I've seen a lot of that in some neighborhoods that will get together and they'll have their brunch. And sometimes that's all that, you know, you just know at least they're out there and they're drinking their mimosas, like they say. But yeah, there's definitely some of that. And I know, you know, as a runner, how much that means just to see that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. How long has Prairie Fire been in existence? Is this a race that's been around for, you know, dozens of years, still relative infancy, kind of the teenage years? Where are we at, mm-hmm, as far as the duration of this race?
We're moving into our broody years, perhaps. No, the first time Prairie Fire actually ran was 10-10-10. So that was a big deal because,
right,
you know, that fun little date. So Prairie Fire itself is not that old. Wichita had a marathon for decades. I know I should know these things, but I believe over, I think about 30 years, Wichita had a marathon, mm-hmm, but the route was unrelated. It kind of was just it was a point to point. And so you kind of ran out in some almost rural areas, mm-hmm, coming into town and stuff. And so Prairie Fire was the first time we had an all in the city, urban, going through the neighborhoods marathon. So, while we've had a marathon in Wichita for a very long time, we have not had one like this. We've only had it since 2010.
Gotcha. And what was the impetus behind starting the race? Did the other race disappear, or was it just because it was a different course, or why?
You know, I think there had been a desire to move it into the city for a long time, and a bunch of guys who had been involved with it, I think they had to do a lot of work with the city to mm-hmm, get that cleared. And then the sports commission who runs the Prairie Fire Marathon got involved. And I think it was also just to showcase that Wichita very much could be a marathon city, mm-hmm. and create a course that would be appealing for others to come to.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Has it continued to grow well and be well received, you know, over the years? Have things changed that much in the 8 or 9 years that it's been? I guess 8 years. We're still talking 8 years mm-hmm. at this point, or this will be mm-hmm. the eighth year. Is it continuing to grow and be, again, I guess I just asked it, be well received, or have there been tweaks, changes? How are things kind of evolved over the last, you know, handful of years?
I think it's a pretty steady rate right now. Our growth is being... where we see the growth is people coming from outside of the area, which is really cool and understandable, because when you live in an area and most runners, you get a hand, you know, only a couple marathons a year anyway. So you're going to go explore other ones. So it's cool to see the people that are coming from elsewhere. Not a ton of changes since its first running, a few tweaks to the course to try to make it faster and, be a little more accommodating, because running in the Midwest on a Sunday, you're always going to upset somebody with a church.
Church, yeah, you're going to have a problem there.
Yeah. So, which is not always true, because we have some very, very supportive churches who come out on their lawns and they move service to the church, which just blesses my heart. I'm like, oh, that screams community. So, not a ton of changes. Just if anything, trying to meet expectations, be better. Definitely, if any changes, the more visible ones, if you see our early pictures, we had some scaffolding and some small start and finish signs. And, you know, now we've got the gigantic inflatables and our mile markers are more visible, more modern, you know, just those things are the changes, but not a ton of tremendous changes to the courses yet. I think there's, in due time, I think we'll need to make a few tweaks out on the full marathon course just so it's faster. But gotcha. Yeah.
Good deal. You mentioned that a lot of the growth seems to be coming from people coming in from out of town to run the race. And of course, I mean, you know, we're talking to certainly a countrywide, if not even and even a worldwide, there's plenty of folks from around the world that listen to this. And if any of them, again, whether you're coming from out of state, out of country, whatever the case might be, and thinking about adding this race to their calendar, whether it's this year, next year, somewhere in the not too distant future, what are the travel logistics like for somebody coming in from out of town? That's maybe, you know, whether it's out of town but drivable, or even out of town and probably the better bet is to fly somewhere. What are we looking at logistic wise to get to Wichita for the race?
It shouldn't be too tricky. As you know, driving is very simple, because we're right there at the crisscross essentially of two, you know, not totally. One's I-70 is a little farther north, but that's how most people will get here from, you know, east or west, and then 35 is north and south. So that part is very easy. And our starting line is like right on Highway 400, which is super, super easy. I mean, it's one exit off, but, flying sometimes can present a little bit of an annoyance, just because sometimes it's cheaper to get to Kansas City and drive, depending on how far away you are. But our airport is just fine. I don't want to sound like a stand-up comedian, like, oh, did you see that airport? Completely remodeled, and when you get off the plane, you don't necessarily think you're in a small town anymore. So that part is not a problem. And then if you can book in time, you cannot beat the hotel options, because we have four hotels that you can just stroll right out the front door and walk right to the starting line. So use your own toilet and walk right out. So that part, I always, like, I would kill for, because in most races, that's just not an option.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only, like you said, to be able to stay in and use the bathroom as close to the start of the race as possible, but also just to not have to be standing around for half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, worry about parking, all that kind of stuff. You can just walk out 10 minutes before the race starts, get in the corral and go. That's something that the cheap side of me has started to think that, like, you know, it might be worth spending an extra $20 or $30 for the hotel for a night or two nights or whatever, to do that, as opposed to, like, I'm going to save $20, but then have to get a taxi or an Uber or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Be there, like then, it's, then it, you're not really saving anything to begin with. So
no, exactly.
Yeah, that's a nice little perk.
That's worth every penny. Like I think one time in Dallas for their marathon, it wasn't even their host hotel, but the hotel we stayed at was literally on the finish line. And so technically I think I was supposed to walk far away and get in, but I could literally walk out the door and kind of swoop underneath something. And it was like, that is worth all the money in the bank because the porta potties technically were much further away. Mm-hmm. So definitely a tangent, but like when it comes to pre-race bathroom, that is so important to me.
Yes, totally agree. And you're not going to get, I don't think too many people are going to argue
that
standing in line for a porta potty is better than having your hotel bathroom right there.
Yes. And then the fear of, am I going to make it in time before the gun goes off?
Right. Exactly. What about the weather? What's and obviously, you know, weather changes year to year, but what are kind of the typical weather forecasts, you know, heat, cold, things like that, you know, for somebody who's thinking about maybe I'm going to, you know, I got a, this is a flat course, a good chance to BQ. And then, you know, some of those races where they advertise that and then the average weather, you know, start time temperatures are in the 70s and like, well, that kind of negates the whole flat and fast type of thing because it's too hot. What's the weather like in Wichita in the middle of October every year?
You know, it should be perfect and there have, it's bipolar. Yes. I wish I could sell this part, but I would be just like the boldest liar. there have been years in October I have stood there and it's been in the 30s, which for me is perfect because I want it cold when I start, because that gives you a chance, you know, what is it? Maybe going to be at the 50s by noon or something. It can get hot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it can be hot. Now it's not going to be summertime hot, but marathoning, you know, anything above 70 is really hot. So there have been wonderful years where it's been cloud cover and even a nice little gentle rain. But then there have been years that, standing at the starting line, it's potentially pushing 70 degrees. So that would be the rolling the dice element, because then there have been years that it has been chilly and everything you expect from a fall marathon. But I'm going to go ahead and blame like climate change. That's not our fault. So.
Right. Yeah. But and you know, like it's one of those things where I've never been one to be too, you know, like caught up in the, what's the weather potentially going to be like, because it can be one way or the other. And one year, the next, it's, I mean, everywhere has those issues, but you know, again, if it's something that you're really trying to nail in it, this is going to be my race to BQ or set a big PR or something like that, it's certainly a factor. And yeah, there's no way to predict it perfectly, but you know, hopefully you can kind of get the trend of what's it going to be. But yeah, I mean, anything in, I feel like at least anything kind of early to mid October, it's always a roll of the dice, you know, unless you're far enough north where it's probably going to be pretty cool.
Right.
But yeah, you could get some weather that's great. And it's kind of like the Disney race down here in January. You can get some years when it's, you know, 45, 50. And like you said, pretty much for me, that's about perfect stand around, wait to start weather. And then hopefully it doesn't get up too much warmer. And then you have some years that, it's legitimately 70 degrees at 5 o'clock in the morning before the race starts.
Right.
And it's just not going to be the best day. And you just got to do it as you can. What's the, we talked about the growth factor of kind of steady growth. What are the numbers here? Because, you know, some people that's a big thing too. They like the races that are thousands and thousands of people. And there's people like me that are more of like, give me a couple thousand, give me enough where I'm never feeling alone out there, but not so much that I feel like I have to elbow myself through the first 8 miles before the race stretches out. What's the field like for Prairie Fire?
And we run simultaneously, the half and the full start at the same time. So, and you share the course, not for a tremendous amount of miles, for about 5 miles, you share the course exactly. And then you do meet up again at the end in that first 5 miles or so is going to be the heaviest congestion. But you're definitely not bumping elbows. I would say to expect about 2,000 people starting together, but
and that's combined both half and full.
Yes. Okay. Right. Yeah. The majority of those numbers, like most races we'll see, is the half marathon. Mm-hmm. And so they split off, about 5 miles into the race, but, there's such varied, people that signed up for our race that, I've never struggled maybe beyond that first, right, half mile, just finding your jockeying for your place, you're not going to be bumping elbows. Gotcha. But at the same time, you shouldn't be alone. Now, the marathon is lonely no matter what, in my opinion, after about mile 22. So it definitely spaces out for sure towards the end. But I would never say I've experienced being completely alone. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be in a pack that's too large towards the end of the marathon. And then you do meet up again with the half at a certain point. So for me, that's a morale booster because I like to see other people mm-hmm. know that I'm not out there suffering. But I would say about 2,000 is what we start with. And then after those races start, we also have a 5K and some children's events too, but those don't interfere right at that point. So, I totally understand that. It's a running Boston, you are never alone. Mm-hmm. And that can be a little overwhelming at some points, but it's also, I wouldn't liken it to being out like completely on a rural highway or anything like that. So probably a healthy dose. You get the community that you're looking for without being a ghost town.
Yeah, that's like I said, I mean, that's kind of my ideal situation is some people, but not mm-hmm. sardine mm-hmm. situation. Because I ran one race a few years ago. Actually, kind of, I guess it's a little bit more than a few years ago now, but it was one of those really small, I think there was a half and a full and a 50K and a 50 miler all going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it was small enough where they legitimately were like, the race starts at 6:30, but if you want to start earlier, we'll have the clipboard by the start line. Just write down your name and what time you started and we'll figure it out at the end. I mean, there was, I don't remember the exact numbers, but probably the entire all four distances, there was maybe 75 people total or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you had people starting early, people starting on time. And it was, I did the marathon that day and there were several stretches that once you got past whatever, when things started to spread out a little bit, 4 or 5 miles from the people that started at the beginning, where it was like, as far as you could see in front of you and as far as you could see behind you, like there was no one. And every once in a while you'd come upon somebody or somebody would come upon you, but it was just like a lot of it was lonely. And, mm-hmm. it's good, bad. It is what it is, but sometimes it is nice to have a few other people to kind of morale boost, even if you're not talking, mm-hmm. even if everybody's just got their headphones in.
Right.
But you can still see that. All right. I'm going to hang on to her and not let her get out of my view, and let her pull me along a little bit. It's nice having a few people at least, I think.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And, having moved into, I started just as a runner and ran the race a couple of years before I started working with them. And I missed being out there so much. People always said was it a dog at the park who's on his leash and like, mm-hmm. let me go. And then I was able to thankfully move into, building the pace teams and being able to put myself on some of the pace teams if, I could cover some of my responsibilities. And that also opened my eyes too, to see what a different pace than I normally would run was experiencing out there. And for sure, I work really hard with our pacers to kind of create that as much as they can, try to encourage them, keep mm-hmm. them with you and, best case scenario, push them ahead of you, but try not to lose them. But for sure, there are some stretches where it's quiet and everybody's just dogged. And for sure, working with those pacers to do that job, because I personally have been in the same situation where you're just as far as the eye could see, mm-hmm. am I even on the right course anymore? Yeah. And for me, that's, I think your pace slows. I think your mm-hmm. Spirit drops. And so if anything, trying to encourage our pacers to help. We've got really cool high school kids who almost every year are at one of the last aid stations, and they are 100% there for the runners. They are such cool mm-hmm. kids. And so they are there to lift their spirits too. But yeah, that's, there's not a ton you can do to keep the cluster real big in those last few miles, but definitely we try to do our part to keep their spirits high.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, every race is always going to thin out as the longer the race goes and it's always going to be the situation. But yeah, it's, you know, for me again, and everybody's different, but as long as I can see somebody, that's a step in the right mm-hmm. direction. Mm-hmm. That makes things just a little bit mm-hmm. easier. I guess maybe one or two last questions on the race before we kind of start wrapping things up today. Mm-hmm. For people that are coming in from out of town, whether it's a drive-in, whether they're flying in, whatever the case might be, what else is going on, or is there anything else going on besides just the race? Or is it pretty much like the race is the race weekend? Are there pre-race events, post-race events, parties, you know, the beer tent, like whatever, you know, some races have those things, some races don't. what's that situation like for Prairie Fire?
For as far as the race goes, it's kind of the event. We try not to overlap too much going on just for the sake of not stepping on anyone's mm-hmm. toes. There's always something going on in Wichita. And I'm always actually surprised because I'm like, I've lived here my whole life. And I'm like, oh, we do that. And so there's always something to do. So as far as, especially when your family's coming, there are fantastic museums right there in the same facility. Our science museum, our historical museum, our zoo is top notch. I mean, it stands up, you know, against most of them in the country. So there's always stuff going on. Or, you know, there's something on Saturdays that our art museum is free thanks to a gift. And so there's always stuff to do. And anyone who tells you otherwise is silly and they've never gotten out of the house. But, as far as things to do dealing with the race, our expo is pretty big in the fall, welcoming lots of other, you know, wellness and fitness like-minded mm-hmm. companies and things like that. So there's plenty of that to go on. And then during the race itself, our entire area is turned into the Athletes Village. And so as one who doesn't drink, I am like the biggest outlier as far as runners. But I always have to double check because everybody needs to know. There's always beer. And mm-hmm. we try to actually make sure that we provide some of our local craft beer because we have lots and lots of that going on here too. So that is always a big seller. We have lots of local beer available Friday, Saturday, up and down in the same vicinity as the race. Old Town Wichita has lots of great local restaurants, local beer, local music. And so there's always plenty to do, whether you're here by yourself, here with your running friends, here with your family. And, you know, I could go on and on and on. I might think I'm a little in love with where I live, but I'm very proud of all that we have available here.
Well, that's better than the alternative of being like, the place I live sucks. Like, you don't want anybody to be saying that kind of
here.
Stuff.
Right.
Right. Goodness. So, anything else about the race, to kind of, you know, that I didn't ask you about that you'd like to share with everybody listening to, you know, to something that makes it, I don't know, just anything else about the race in general that we didn't talk about that you want to make sure to get out there?
Oh, that's a good question. I think one thing that traveling all over and being, you know, able to see it through runner's eyes, you know, everybody could at every race could do a million things to make it better. That's no question. And that's never far from our minds of the things that we could do to make it better. I am always so impressed by how kind and compassionate our volunteers are, because I really didn't know much about volunteering in an official capacity until I got involved with the race. And I am stunned by how many volunteers it takes to put on a race. Yes, stretching people 26 miles across the city is one thing. And so there are people who start at 3 o'clock in the morning laying cones down mm-hmm. and whatnot. But everyone from high school kids to just groups of families who say, well, we like to volunteer together. It's a way to give back. That village that it takes to support the runners is really impressive. They're so dedicated, whether it's people putting bibs together through the week or safety pins and stuff. So I have been totally impressed by the people who give their time to make this race what it is. And that's not always been my experience at every event I've gone to. You know, some people are there because they got to be, and it shows. And it's not been my experience with the people who give of their time. There's there's no one making money and give of their time. And they're like, yeah, well, we're here for you. That's like they'll say to the runners, like, you know, there's a lot of sweet runners who thank you, thank you, thank you. And they're like, yeah, happy to. And I believe it. So that's been one of the more impressive things. The more I've worked with the race and not knowing a ton about operations before getting into it, how many people are just there to serve. So that's been probably one of the bigger prideful elements about this race for me.
Yeah, fantastic. And that gives me a chance to remind everybody of my one thing that I've always said, and I think I always will say, is never pass up a chance to thank a volunteer on race day, because without them, there's not going to be a race. It's just not going to happen. No matter big race, small race, whatever. If you don't have volunteers, you don't have a race. So always make sure to thank those folks.
Yes. And you know, you're running and it may feel hot or cold while you're running. They're 10 times colder or warmer than you are. And so, yeah, for sure. I learned that lesson a long time ago, and I tried to do that myself.
Yeah, certainly. So as we're wrapping up, Lacey, the final question, a little bit less Prairie Fire specific, and kind of getting back to you and your running a little bit more. And you know, as I've been doing now for quite a while, I'd have to go back and look at when I exactly started doing this. But I like to close with something I call a philosophical question, which is just kind of like the introductory question, very open-ended. You know, no right answer, certainly no wrong answer, just whatever comes to mind for you. And I'd just be curious to know, you know, at this point in your life, like you said, with running being kind of a part of your life from way back, even though you weren't running as much, but to where you are now working in at a race, so running as part of the work life, running as part of still of your life that, you know, something you enjoy to do, you're fighting back from an injury to get back to running, all the things that running, is still bringing to your life. Why is running so important to you that, you know, you've kind of done what I've done and let it kind of take over more than just a couple hours a week of your time and really make it part of your life on a daily basis? Why do you continue to run at this point in your life?
I like how you said it. Why? Because sometimes I have to ask myself that. A friend always likes to say the best part of running is the over part. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I totally get that. But I think for me, it has served as, you know, a daily supplement for my mental health. Mm-hmm. It is also, you know, definitely it's that solitude, time away, time to sort things out, time to let the endorphins do what they're supposed to do for your brain and all of that. There's that valuable part of it. But the surprising part of it that I didn't expect, and from a raging introvert, you know, give me my quiet corner with nobody and a book and I will be happy for a lifetime. So I thought, I have met people who are now my family, and I wouldn't have expected it. These are not people that my life would have brought me to. You know, one of my best friends in the whole world is 20 years older than me. He's an engineer. I'm, you know, we have absolutely nothing in common, but now he and his family come to our holidays. They are family. And I have made connections with people that, you know, that will last a lifetime. And, you know, I lightheartedly, because it probably shouldn't be likened so, but like, we're like war buddies. When you train with someone, when you go through a marathon with someone, when you, it's all exposed. And that has been the gift that, I would have never expected. And so, yeah, the gift of, health is one thing, but the gift that running friends have, been in my life is just invaluable.
Yes, totally, totally agree. And, as per usual, I'm not going to try to say anything else, because you said it perfectly. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. So, once again, guys, if you're, you know, piqued your interest a little bit, like what you hear about Prairie Fire Marathon, definitely check it out. PrairieFireMarathon.com is the website. We didn't even talk about it much, but you'll also notice that there's a spring race and a fall race. The spring race is only a half, quote unquote. Only.
Correct.
There's not a marathon option
only
in the spring. But in the fall, there's a marathon and the half marathon. And then, like Lacey said, 5K kids run events and stuff like that as well. Mm-hmm. But all that information, PrairieFireMarathon.com. And if you want to connect with Lacey individually on the social medias, Twitter and Instagram, at Lacey J. Hansen, and on all the platforms, look for Prairie Fire Marathon. Run P PFM on Twitter, at Run Prairie Fire on Instagram, and just search for Prairie Fire Marathon on the Facebooks. And as per usual, I'll have everything linked up in the show notes, disruns.com/593. So, Lacey, thanks for taking the time today. Thanks for kind of doing double duty, talking about yourself a little bit and sharing some of your story, and also talking about a race that sounds pretty darn neat, and something that might be worth some folks trying to get to and checking out and experiencing it for themselves. So appreciate your time. Certainly looking forward to staying in touch and wishing you nothing but the best going forward.
Yeah, thank you. It was really fun. I'm glad we got to talk.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed this conversation between Lacey and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was something that we talked about today that stood out in your mind a little bit, that resonated? Maybe it was about the race. Maybe it was about something about Lacey's story that and her journey and her running experience as well. And for me, that's where my takeaway comes from, is from before talking about Prairie Fire. And we'll get to that again in just a second. But before talking about that, she mentioned something that you, if you know me well, you probably could have guessed that this was going to be my takeaway for today. And that was the idea, and I mean, we even touched on it a little bit more, but the idea that coming off of a injury is when she's run some of her best and strongest races. The idea that maybe, just maybe, we runners, and I'm guilty of this too, so not throwing anybody under the bus without throwing myself under there as well, but that we maybe tend to be overtrained, worn down, fatigued because of what we're doing, all under the guise of, this is going to give me my best chance to run my best race. Yet maybe, just maybe, a few less miles of running, a few more, you know, miles or hours or however you want to quantify it, on the cross trainer, on the yoga mat, doing the little things that I talk about all the time. Maybe, just maybe, that would make a difference. Maybe that would be the little bit, the little thing that makes all the difference in nailing your goal versus not nailing your goal. And that's not something that was necessarily I talked about in the book, which I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, but something to keep in mind, when you are training for your next race, when you are putting your training plan together, maybe, just maybe, cutting some of that volume down a little bit, or at least at the very least, cutting down some of that intensity, running easy most of the time. That might be the key. Not for nothing, and you can take this with a grain of salt or not, but Dr. Maffetone, who's all about the heart rate training, his belief is that it's not an if, but it's a when. When somebody breaks the 2-hour marathon mark, it's not going to be because Nike put together this fancy thing with the perfect air drag and yada, 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 and peak training. It's going to be because somebody backed off the training. Somebody who was obviously very fit, very gifted genetically, all the right, diets, fuels, all that kind of stuff. But instead of pushing it in training, it's going to be somebody who's does the training, but backs off, respects the body, doesn't force things, comes into the event very well rested. And that's going to make all the difference. And maybe something that you might want to consider as well. If you've got some races coming up, maybe come into them a little bit more rested, maybe extend that taper, maybe just maybe, that'll make all the difference for you. I don't know, something that I might try. And speaking of Prairie Fire Marathon again, as this episode gets released here on July the 9th, 2018, still up in the air, but there is a decent chance, I think there's a decent chance that I might be making the trip to Kansas this fall to run the Prairie Fire Marathon. So if that comes to fruition, I will certainly let you know. But if you're not the type of person that's already planned out half of 2019's race schedule already, if you're still kind of, I don't know, maybe I'll run something in the fall, and Prairie Fire, flat, fast, pretty decent weather, at least, typically pretty decent weather. If that sounds like it might be fun for you, and you might want to run a few miles with me, or at least join me for a drink after the race, I will let you know. So keep that weekend open. I believe Lacey said the 14th of October, 2018. I'll let you know. As soon as I know, I'll let you know. And if I can get a discount code worked in there as well, Lacey, if you're listening to this, hook a brother up with a discount code at least. We'll throw it out there to everybody. And if you're there, you can make it. You want to join me? I'll buy you a drink after the race. So, and if not, or if you have no desire to run with me anyway, but you want to run Prairie Fire, it sounds like a really great race, definitely check it out, prairiefiremarathon.com. And if you need help training for it, Be Ready on Race Day. We're working all the plugs into this outro today. BeReadyOnRaceDay.com. Check out the book. It'll help you train for the race. And if there's anything I can do for you, for whether you're running Prairie Fire or anything else this fall, let me know. Always happy to help out. Always happy to offer some advice, whether it's a call, whether it's a tweet, whatever it is. Let me know. So with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this thing. Thank you guys, as always, for listening to the show. Thank you for all you do to spread the word, to support the races, support the sponsors, support the show, the growth, telling others about it. It means a lot. We are continuing to grow, and I know it's all because of each and every one of you that's listening today. And everything that you do may seem insignificant to you to mention it during a run chat or to tell a friend about the show or something like that. But boy, it makes a difference. It moves the needle, and I appreciate all of you that go out of your way to do that. So with that, we'll go ahead and officially now put a bow on this thing. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you have a great rest of the day, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon. But until then, please be well. Please take good care. And thanks again for listening. See you guys.